Somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout, but there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck!
I only got one thing to say to you. Strike this mother out.
2-2. He got a perfect game ever done by the King.
Hey, you! How you like him, Apple?
Took away a game-tying home run for Manny Ramirez.
That's my thing, fellas.
We will see you tomorrow night.
Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for visiting us this evening.
Well, Dick Laurent is dead. It is happening again, and people are under a lot of stress, Brody. I will sneak as many David Lynch references as I want into the podcast because it is our first episode in 2 weeks. You know, as we all know, elections don't always go as we expect. Sometimes we can't always have our finger on the pulse of what the people are thinking, you know, and certain figures may pop up who we either like or don't like. But at the end of the day, we have to accept what the people think is the best way forward. And I, for one, take a lot of comfort in the fact that Ray Fiennes is behind the scenes cooking up votes and trying to steer the people in the way of democracy. I don't know of any other elections that happened in the past 2 weeks, but I was happy to see the movie Conclave with you. That was a very good time. Excited to talk about it today on Mudville. I am one of your hosts, Nolan Rabine.
I am your other host, Brody Staub, who is a huge fan of Ray Fiennes cooking the books for the Pontiff. Conclave was fantastic. I really kind of wish we had a Ray Fiennes-esque character going up to like senators and lawyers in Washington, just telling them you will never be president. A Billy on the Street style reality show of him doing that to random people and telling them they will never be Pope would be awesome, and I'd watch that. This is an interesting character for Ray Fiennes because he's normally, you know, he's a villain. He's very ominous and villainous. And in this, he had like a really soft smile and like a kindly older man presence that like was comforting for a while. I enjoyed the movie. It was fantastic. We can get into it a little more.
Yeah, well, we're coming to you guys on Monday, November 18th. We're going to do our free agent predictions today. But Brody and I saw the movie Conclave with Ray Fiennes over the weekend, and we just had a few thoughts that we wanted to get into. I didn't know what to expect going into it, because usually I'm not the biggest fan of movies about religion. I think there's been too many Oscar bait movies about the Pope recently, whether it's like the young Pope or the new Pope or the two popes, which I think have all
this
been different.
This is the dead Pope.
So. Yeah, this is the dead Pope, and we're scrambling to find a new one. They essentially Trojan horsed a politics movie into a religion movie, and that's really the best way to get me interested into it. You know,
let's
give
me the Tooch and Ray Fiennes like run around plotting. That's amazing. I enjoyed.
Dude, Rafe and the Tooch were like LeBron and Wade in this movie. It's crazy. It's like,
it was fantastic.
The Tooch like lobbed it off of the backboard, and then Ray Fiennes caught it and yammed it. Maybe they'll build a statue of Stanley Tucci that looks absolutely nothing like him.
You know what? Actually, the Wade statue looks a little bit more like Stanley Tucci than Dwayne Wade. So maybe
I think that's
honest.
Actually true. If Stanley Tucci had like
he
that
had big beard.
Thick beard, I think you could make that argument. But Dwayne Wade doesn't have the beard either, so...
We missed the statue discourse in our 2 weeks.
We did miss the statue discourse. It's probably the worst statue of the decade. Statue power rankings, bottom five of all time. Ronaldo.
That's a rough one.
The Ronaldo. What else? What were some bad statues over the years? I mean, do we even have
any?
Well,
I mean, this
ones?
One is up there.
Dwayne Wade.
There's that one of the Confederate general that got taken down that was like awful.
That's
like
a good
Nathaniel
one.
Bedford, I think, which I just pulled that, and I'm pretty sure that was the name, and I'm very proud of myself for remembering that.
Yeah,
go
I think
look
he's
up
the,
Nathaniel Bedford statue.
I think he's the founder of the KKK. You'll probably find a lot about him. But
oh, God, maybe don't.
Don't Google that guy. Bottom three statues, no doubt. I've said on the pod before, I think, like, even with the religious movies of Scorsese, like, those have typically been towards the bottom of my list, personally, just because I haven't connected to those as well as I have the other ones where, you know, I feel like has a little bit more to say about my life or the things that I think about on a day-to-day basis. You know, a lot of the movies questioning about whether God is out there listening to us or if he cares or is indifferent to our lives. Some of the questions even asked by some of the old masters like Carl Dreyer and Ingmar Bergman. Like I mentioned Dreyer, I think Odette is like incredible, and I don't know why that one works for me so much when so many of the other ones don't, or I just feel sort of apathetic towards them. But I have tended to not care as much about movies that center around religious figures, but it did feel, you know, like it had at least a finger near the pulse of where we're at right now with how people are talking about the coordination of power and how ideological movements get off the ground. I mean, this certainly explores that in a way that is definitely intentional with the release so close to the election, which did draw a little bit of irony from me. And I think I had to sort of suspend belief at one point.
Its usage of actual like religious iconography is kind of, it's limited to just the Sistine Chapel. I thought that was kind of interesting because everywhere else that you see is this boring, drab, dark, dingy, unappealing and uninspired location, like empty and bare and just like just nowhere you'd want to be. You know, then they go to the Sistine Chapel to do their voting and all that, and it's like this beautiful place, but even then it has like this weird, it's dark, it's like it's just uninviting. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And just, you know, also I thought it was kind of cheating because this movie uses, its cinematography is amazing, but it's cheating because everybody is wearing this like beautiful red and white uniform, and you have all of these people dressed in this really striking uniform. It just makes it so easy. Also, it's set against, again, like a really classic architecture, like in the chapel and like in the grounds and stuff, and in these like crappy, dingy little cafeterias and all those kinds of things. When you have like, there's a shot in the trailer, so it's not really a spoiler, but like the Cardinals like smoking a cigarette standing around, and it adds this really cool juxtaposition of like the modern touches set against this backdrop of like really classic, like ancient order iconography, that you have having one of the Cardinals who was earlier smoking a cigar. At one point he trades it out for like a little vape that's like lighting up in his hand, and that's really funny. Like there's, you know, it's a little unfair because it's so easy to give you like this really powerful visual, you know, but I thought it was really well done, and I enjoyed it a lot.
They do show a lot of these newer technologies sort of in like the setting of the church where you wouldn't expect these things to be, or you think of as so like classic and like ancient. Ray Fiennes like struggling to make copies at his printer, like that kind of thing, like is, I know what you mean about the like juxtaposition. I liked that quite a bit as well.
Ray Fiennes with his glasses and a nun using like a really old Microsoft computer was very funny. Everybody that comes out of that.
Dude, I felt insane. I didn't realize that like the main nun in this movie was Isabella Rossellini. I felt like an idiot when the credits rolled. I was like, holy shit, I really had no idea. Cinematographer for this movie was Stefan Fontaine. And I'm looking at his other credits right now, and it looks like he shot the movie Jackie, the Jackie Kennedy movie from Pablo Larraín with Natalie Portman. It's another very red movie with a lot of like dresses and backdrops. And so, hey, maybe this guy is
a very red movie.
Maybe he's a red merchant for all we know.
You know what? Red looks great on film. It just does. It pops when you have a lot of uniform. Like if you have anybody in like a large crowd in a uniform, you know, you can just, it's cheating. That's what it's so simple to make it look amazing. And they really did a good job even then.
The director, Edward Berger, this was the first of his movies I watched. He did that All Quiet on the Western Front remake from 2 years ago, which, fun fact, we actually discussed in the very first episode of this podcast because we did it right after the Oscars, and that movie inexplicably won like 7 of them. So, hey, maybe we'll see that again with this. Who knows? I was pretty surprised by how much I enjoyed it. I mean, I expected, you know, sort of a 3-star cap on a movie like this, and yeah. Ended up giving it 3.5 with a chance to even bump it up to 4. One of the first scenes of this movie, the Pope dies, and we see him die, and his body is hauled off, and Ralph Fiennes quickly realizes that he will be tasked with helming the committee to organize the votes to pick a new Pope. So you have all of these characters showing up like 20 minutes into the movie or so, you know, people filing in, all these various factions of the church, clearly with their own agendas to set and candidates who they want to elect Pope. Stanley Tucci is the more progressive, like inclusive type, where he wants, you know, everybody to get the best out of the faith and to create a big tent where everybody can be included and everybody can feel welcomed by the church. And then the rival cardinal who's introduced, Tedesco, played by an actor named Sergio Castellitto. I think this was the first role I've seen him in, but he did a very good job. Awesome. And he's sort of this conservative, like turn back the clock type cardinal, which of course just means declare war on Islam and include only white Europeans within the church. So that's sort of the ideological battle that sets the backdrop or what is sort of on Ralph Fiennes' mind as he recognizes like the importance of his task. He also introduces a new cardinal, Benitez, from I believe it's Afghanistan,
Kabul from Mexico. Bounced around the world, like mysterious background.
Who the dead Pope had brought into the church unbeknownst to anybody else. And, you know, they were sort of up in the air about what to do over the legitimacy of that. But Ralph Fiennes really goes to bat for him, and Benitez becomes part of the vote. And we also have John Lithgow as Cardinal Tremblay, who's this real opportunist who will stick a knife in somebody's back when they aren't looking, just to try to consolidate power. A real Joe Biden type. Tucci, I think, goes from Bernie complimentary to Bernie derogatory, as he really doesn't have too much of a backbone to actually run on this candidacy himself, and then goes, well, you know, we want to keep this other guy out, so maybe we just organize behind this really old guy who nobody likes. And I had a little PTSD watching him do that. Ralph Fiennes, at a certain point, comes to this realization where he finds out that, you know, one of these cardinals severely betrayed another and invited somebody to the church who was going to make this cardinal look especially bad. Part of what his job is to confront this guy before the rest of the committee finds out. Also ask the question of, should I even do this? What's the best way for like me to play this? Because there are questions at certain points about people voting for Ralph Fiennes' character himself, who we're just calling him Ralph Fiennes. His name is Lawrence. His cardinal
Lawrence Thomas.
Yes.
Larry Tom.
Larry L. Tom. And a couple people start to vote for him. They start to vote for Stanley Tucci. It's just chaos all over. And it's just the impossible task of trying to whip votes into a specific outcome. And it sounds like maybe it wouldn't be the exact movie we would want to watch right now, but I actually found it to be kind of refreshing because, you know, I don't really care who the Pope is, but damn, do I love the political process.
It's great. There's also a really good moment where, you know, they do a nod to like how ridiculous it is, and yeah, it's very akin to U.S. politics, and someone is jokingly asked like, oh, what did he offer you, Secretary of State? You know, like, they're, you know, it's aware that it is a good analogy, but it also is just, you know, it's fun to watch all these cardinals running around, you know, with kind of stakes going on here. Like, it's, you know, I don't know much about like how the Pope is actually received around the world, to be honest. I know he's really important. It doesn't feel that way to me or really anybody I know that well. I'm assuming to a lot of people he's an extremely important figure. So it is interesting to see like the way that these very ideological old men go about choosing who is going to take up that seat. So it's fun. It's a fun ride of a movie. I enjoyed it. I also thought it was kind of interesting how you have, you mentioned like the representation of like the traditional values, the progressive values, and then Benitez represents something which doesn't really exist in actual U.S. politics, which is somebody who is like entirely devoted to what they believe in, you know, like, or at least presented as like, you know, pious and like honest and like actually trying to live up to the value of what the religion is supposed to be, quote unquote. And, you know, I'm not huge fan of organized religion myself, but like, you know, the ideas of like, you know, spreading love and like appreciating people and, you know, denouncing war because it's awful and like they've seen it themselves, like all these things are like important. And having somebody in there who actually has you know, a record that says that they actually believe and act on those things is interesting, because it completely shakes up the room with all these other ideological people who have these stances that are kind of more political, you know, and not as human. So, like, this person comes in as a good foil to, you know, the traditionalist and even, like, the power-hungry side and, like, all these different parties who are, you know, squabbling. And it's like, well, in the face of all these people squabbling, somebody who actually is, like, honest and believes in humanity is extremely different and stands out and can be effective. So it was kind of fun to see the difference that there is between that and like the analogy they're making to the U.S. politics. But yeah.
Yeah. And not only had the Benitez character seen war and seen conflict and poverty, he was probably the only one in the room who had done so because, you know, especially the conservative cardinals, the one, you know, calling to turn back the clock to the 1950s or whatever, they're all these 70-year-old chunky white guys who have never seen conflict and never struggled in their lives and were probably born into money, and that's how they acquired their positions or, you know, making assumptions about these side characters who have no lore. But it is definitely, you know, you have a firsthand account or you have these judgmental, sheltered assholes, essentially. And yeah, you know, that is the crux of it when, you know, at such a bleak time, it seems, for politics. I did have difficulty believing in something so idealistic and such a...
It does end hopeful. It does. It has a hopeful ending. It ends on a nice note that, like, you walk out being like, interesting. All right, well, that's something that you can kind of feel good about. And then there's a part of your brain that's just like, yeah, that wouldn't be how that goes. So, like, you know, it's fun. I enjoy it. It's a nice way to write a movie. But I have a hard time thinking that the group of men that we've seen throughout this entire thing would go the way that they go at the end of this movie. But still a good ride.
And a final 10 minutes that goes totally into left field, and I was not expecting one bit. Fun movie about, like, the political process in a film where I didn't think that was going to be the main focus. So I was pleasantly surprised by Conclave. I think that is about all that I have to say about it. Brody, do you have anything else on this movie?
I think that's fair. Ralph Fiennes is incredible. Love the Tooch. John Lithgow gives a pretty good performance, too. He always is interesting to me because he's very indignant all the time. Like, I feel like in anything, he just plays indignant well. It feels a little, I don't know. I wasn't a huge fan. It was like an okay performance from John Lithgow. But, yeah. Also, the guy who played Salador San in Game of Thrones, who is a pirate friend of Davos Seaworth in the early seasons, is in this, and he gives a pretty good performance, too. So he's fun. Like seeing a nice role for him. Good movie overall. I'd give it a 3.5 feels fair. I think a 3.5 that can maybe on rewatch go different. But I like a 3.5 for it. That feels good.
One quick thing to mention before we get into our free agency predictions. The Tampa Bay Rays will be playing their 2025 season in Steinbrenner Field and paying the Yankees $15 million for the privilege to do so. I have a couple thoughts on this, but do you have anything first before I do that?
Yeah, they're paying Brandon Lau $8.7 million. He's their most expensive player, so they are now paying more for their home than they are for anybody on their roster. They're going to have to raise up the whole place, they're going to have to ray up the place. So we'll see how that goes. Going to have to rebrand the whole thing. I'm curious if the Yankees are going to be taking money from their gates. Kind of interesting because the Rays don't draw a whole lot during the regular season unless the Red Sox or the Yankees are in town. So we'll see how that goes. Could be kind of interesting on how they end up spending some money this offseason. Might pay into or play into that, which, you know, they're never going to spend a lot anyway, but could be less even then. So I don't know. We'll see. I think we'll be able to give a better what is this going to do once we get a little bit closer to this season and figure out how this is actually going to work logistically. The Yankees have to beat them this season when they go down there. Now like, you know, pressure's on. You can't lose to a team in your single A building. That's paying you to play there.
That's very true. I'm curious what the environment will be like for the actual baseball in the games. Like, I'm wondering if it'll be a bunch of offensive slugfests throughout the summer. I know they've got a pretty short porch in right field out there.
Well,
guys like Brandon Lau might have a career year. Josh Lowe, I mean, I'm trying to think of what other lefty power bats the Rays have. It's not very many, but maybe not the best situation for a team with like elite starting pitching if they can stay healthy, and a pretty uninspiring offense to be playing in sort of a bam box like that, especially when you have so many other teams in the AL East that can rake. Maybe we see some inflated offensive stats in 2025 just because of this.
Two teams playing at Yankee Stadium. Like, the Rays front office now has access to the Yankee Stadium home dimensions for their team. It'll be interesting to see if they actually do anything with that, because it's gonna be 3 years, I think. So if they, like, you know, the Rays front office is known to be extremely smart, so we'll see if they change anything about their organization's makeup or something, or what they're trying to do in the short term, because they had now have access to the Yankee Stadium dimensions instead of the Trop, which, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think has deep corners. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. Notoriously smart Rays, if they, you know, maybe the Yankees could learn something from how they go about, you know, building their offense.
Definitely don't ever want to build my team up like the Rays, at least organizationally speaking. But
maybe we can
look for some player money development from their scouts.
But the two teams playing in minor league stadiums also blows, and they really should have done something about Oakland, because they could not have foreseen this in Tampa. They could have foreseen the thing in Oakland, and they could be playing somewhere else. They don't need to be playing in a minor league stadium for 3 years. Not great. Two teams in the American League playing in minor league stadiums. Really not good for the game, but, you know,
not what we were looking
for. It is
for
what it is.
Yep, it's what we're going to see. You know, one got hit by a hurricane, the other got hit by an asshole. So that's the state of baseball in 2025. And with that, why don't we move into our free agency predictions for the year? Kind of lucky that no major signings have happened yet, so we can still predict like all of the big ones. No sense in not just getting those out of the way, because, you know, once we have those signings intact, you know, usually they act as dominoes for all the other players when teams sort of have a better landscape for what the feel of the league is going to be like next year and how they can best approach their team. But yeah, no, I'm pretty excited to do this. I don't think we did an official free agency prediction last year, so I think this is the first time that we're actually doing one of these, and I'm definitely excited to get right into it. I think we all know who the big names are at this point. The Juan Soto sweepstakes is probably the biggest I can remember, considering that, you know, Ohtani really wasn't a sweepstakes. We kind of all knew where he was going. But we've got other big names like, you know, Alex Bregman, Pete Alonso, Willy Adames. We're going to get into all those. And the addition of Roky Sasaki is also super interesting. It was announced a couple weeks ago that maybe the most electric pitcher that we've seen coming out of Japan in a very long time is going to be making his way to Major League Baseball this year. I expect that to be another NPB to Los Angeles pipeline success, but we'll get into all that in just a moment. Brody, what do you think about the free agency landscape this year, and how did that sort of impact how you predicted where these guys are going to go?
Yeah, a lot of pitching on the market right now, a lot of good pitching. So I think the contracts won't be crazy, because there's not going to be insanely desperate teams going after pitching. Like, you're not going to get a Verlander $43 million contract or whatever this offseason. I have Soto's number is, you know, I'll just say it's at 658. I made this a couple days ago, so I'm going to need to update that now that the Mets apparently offered 660. But we'll get into that more in a minute. Other than that, though, what I was going with, I do have a 300. After that, a 224. And then nothing over 200 after that. They all go down into the 150, 160 range. So it will be, I don't think that we're going to see a lot of crazy spending this offseason. I think there's going to be like a good amount of shaking up, but a lot of shorter term deals, some high AAVs, but nothing, no giant money really this offseason, other than a couple obvious guys.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty fair. I mean, we've seen a couple rumors about what Alex Bregman is looking for in free agency, and it seems a little ridiculous. But that's just always how it goes. I mean, we always root for these players to get paid. You know, I want to see guys, you know, get what they're worth. We want to see every last drop come out of these owners' pockets.
Absolutely. And it is unfortunate that the market is going to limit some of these guys earning after some good seasons from guys who are probably not going to get what they would have gotten in lighter free agent markets. So,
but ultimately, it's all just a negotiation process, a Mexican standoff, if you will. But why don't we get right into it, talk about where these guys are going to go, and we'll start with the big fish. Brody, where do you have Juan Soto signing?
I have him going back to the Yanks. I had him at 14 for 658, which is 47 on average. I had a nice article about the Yankees' offseason plans and what I think they should do. And I had him going back to the Yanks at 658 for 14 years, which, again, $47 million. Now, if you know anything about Scott Boras, you know that his clients like to make the most money ever. This would technically do that because Shohei Ohtani's money, I think, comes out to like 46 on the tax hit. So I don't think a team is going to be able to actually give him $70 million a year. I don't think any team wants to do that. That's ridiculous. So if you can go to 14 years for $47 million, you can tell the world this is actually the biggest contract in baseball history by AAV. And I feel like Scott Boras would like to be able to say that. I wouldn't be surprised if this ends up being higher. As I said earlier, the Mets apparently offered $660. The Yankees also said recently that they will not be outbid for Soto if it comes down to money. So wouldn't be surprised if this ended up around like $675. If it gets closer to $700, I mean, talking some really buku bucks there. That's crazy amounts of money. So, you know, not the $650 is not, but, you know, that is going to get very crazy very fast. I'd also really be surprised if he gets that much higher than $50 million a year. Again, that's an insane amount of money. I also think this contract is going to be laden with like opt-outs every four seasons, pretty much. You know, this is like an A-Rod in Texas type deal. I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to get a bigger contract when he's closing in on 30. So, yeah, so far I think it's fair to say that he ends up back in New York. Whether it is with the Yankees or the Mets, I guess we'll see. I do have him going to the Yankees, though, for about $47 a year. Nolan?
I also put the Yankees. I have him for 14 and 640, so a little bit less than you did, but I think very close numbers there, honestly. I pretty much agree with everything you said. You know, it's never a question of need when it comes to a player like this. You know, all of the major contenders around the league are going to be calling Juan Soto's number. You know, they're going to be calling Scott Boras's number, but setting up meetings with Juan Soto. Realistically, every team in the league should be doing this, but, you know, The obvious ones won't be doing so for obvious reasons. And yeah, you know, it really is expected to come down to the Yankees and Mets. I mean, I know that the Blue Jays say that they want to be serious contenders for him. I don't see that happening at all. It would be the opportunity for the Orioles' new ownership to really make a name for themselves as well, but those just don't seem like totally realistic options to me. I think that it's going to be one of those two New York teams. I've seen a few things over the past couple days, just at the time of recording, you know, that sort of, I think, would indicate the Mets might have a little momentum, but I don't make very much of that. You know, we're at the time of year now where really I tend to ignore any clickbait or headline, what have you, that isn't just like a contract straight up, because like there's so many rumors, so much discussion of, oh, he's going there, who's doing this, you know, John Heyman carrying water for agents and stuff like that, you know, trying to stir up controversy.
Anything from Heyman, I completely ignore.
Yeah. So. a lot of the time, it's just so much better to put all that out of your head and just wait until, you know, the dotted line is actually signed. But that's a very, very difficult thing to do. You know, if things start really heating up and, you know, people are saying that Soto to the Mets is like at the like 1 yard line or whatever, I'm going to be biting my nails and, you know, freaking out just like everybody else. But yeah, I think ultimately it comes down to the fact that the Yankees need to keep Juan Soto, and they know that. And I don't know that there's a number that Steve Cohen can offer that the Yankees are going to say, no, we cannot match that. Go to the Mets. Like, and I don't know, maybe if he gets an offer, they don't even go back to the Yankees. So it's like I'm making some presumptions there about how the process itself will go. But like, I see the Yankees and Juan Soto doing what needs to be done to make a reunion happen. I could be wrong. If he goes to the Mets, I'm in for a very dark decade of my life. I hope that doesn't happen. But it's very possible.
I don't think
it'll
be a big deal if he goes to the Mets, to be honest with you. He'll be a free agent again at 30 no matter what, I think. I'd be shocked if he wasn't.
Arguably just a toss-up between those two right now. I mean, like I said, you're going to hear about other teams, but I don't think they're going to emerge as legitimate contenders. But I'm glad we both have Soto to the Yankees, and at very similar numbers, too. Yeah. Do you want to move on to Willy Adames?
Yeah, Absolutely. I feel very strongly about my Willy Adames pick. I have a feeling we might be
I think we do, but let's see.
I have Willy Adames going to the Braves for 6 years for $108 million, which is 18 a year, simply because Orlando Arcia, I think, is just is not the guy. And I think that Willy Adames would absolutely help this offense. He seems like a Brave. He just kind of has that vibe of just like he's just good. I also think 18 a year for him feels low, but going to the Braves for 6 years and 108, that feels like a contract that they will absolutely offer. And I feel like he'll slot in right there. And also, I mean, the shortstop market this year is not like there's not a lot of contenders who need, and by contenders, I mean like big money spenders who need a shortstop. The Braves had the fourth worst WAR at short last season with Orlando Arcia, and the only three above them were the Oakland A's, the Chicago White Sox, and the Detroit Tigers. So they're the only teams you would argue have a bigger need. I don't think any of them are going to be outspending the Atlanta Braves. I don't think there's any other team around them who could use a better shortstop. Right around them also, you have Miami, Toronto, who, I mean, Bo Bichette, they're expecting probably to get better. Pittsburgh, who, I mean, if the Pirates go in on a free agent, I'd be shocked. Cleveland, San Francisco, who maybe, but I, again, like they have other needs, so we'll see where they end up spending. They're probably going to be in the market, but the Braves feel like a good fit for Adames. Yeah, 6 for 108.
Well, I'm in lockstep with you, I think, like ideologically for why this team is going to want to sign him, but I have him going to the arguably the opposite of where you have, and I think he's going to go to LA, to the Dodgers. And I have that. I have that because, I mean, you say Orlando Arcia is not the guy. Miguel Rojas is not the guy either. And Gavin Lux has not been the guy. He hasn't been able to stay on the field. You know, they're able to turn Tommy Edman and guys like that into like postseason demons every year because they're the Dodgers and it's what they do. They've had like a carousel at shortstop or in like the middle infield as a whole when it's not Mookie Betts at second out there, like for so long at this point. You know, they've had question marks there, and I think really kind of the biggest question mark of their whole organization. I mean, it's been really the only spot where they haven't been able to find a superstar to play, and Willy Adames isn't quite that superstar, but he is an offensive beast. He would slot in into that lineup perfectly. I'm sure he would love to play there. I think he's the kind of guy that would thrive in that environment. And he would fill a pretty big hole that they haven't been able to for a long time. So I've got Adames to the Dodgers for 5 years and $120 million.
That is a very good point. Had not thought about the Dodgers for him, actually. I just kind of blocked out of my mind that they were starting Tommy Edman short. But that is a good point. That's a very good point. Definitely possible.
Absolutely. What's next? Bregman?
Next, I had Jurickson Profar by WAR this season.
Oh, okay.
Well, I have Profar going to the Kansas City Royals for 5 years at $50 million, or excuse me, 5 years, $50 million total, 10 a year. They have Tommy Pham on the way out. They have MJ Melendez out there who is not, you know, not ideal. And Jurickson Profar's X stats are really high. I feel like that's something the Royals would be into. Kind of has like that Royal feel. He's, you know, he's pretty fast. He's got like good bat to ball stuff. Doesn't swing and miss. Doesn't really expand the zone. Like he's just got like good baseball numbers that are like, you know, seem to be kind of in line with what they like to do. And they also are now coming off of a good appearance where they could probably use a nice little acquisition in free agency. So
I am into that. I think he's also going to end up in the AL Central. I think he's going to make a little bit more than you're anticipating, but I could see him ending up as a Detroit Tiger. This is a team that is also trying to propel its way into contention. I mean, we saw their playoff run this year. It was pretty obvious why it fell short. They only had one pitcher and their offense was pretty shaky. But, you know, they clearly have one of the best managers in the league. They have arguably the best pitcher in the league in Tarek Skubal. So they should really be trying to make as many moves as they can towards contention. And I think they could secure the services of Jurickson Profar for 3 years and $80 million. I think he'll be in for a considerable payday after that amazing season he put up this year. I don't think anyone's going to commit long term to him. But, you know, as a former number one overall prospect, we know what Profar is capable of, and it just took him a very long time to show that. But I think someone's going to put some money into the bet that he will be able to keep that up, and I could definitely see it being a team in the American League Central.
Totally. And that is also partially why I have the money a little low at $50 million over 5 years, just because this is really, like, he's done this twice, you know. So after a pretty decent career, you know, time-wise, like, he's been around and he's only flashed this in the last couple of years. So that's all. I feel like there wouldn't be a team to give him some monster contract. I feel like he hasn't done this long enough to get that. But I like where your head's at. I feel like the AL Central is a good spot for him.
Absolutely.
Also, no qualifying offer, so I wouldn't be surprised if one of these, you know, lighter spending teams ends up getting, you know, going after him.
Totally into that. Why don't we go next to Alex Bregman? Where have you got him?
Yeah, sounds good. All right, so Bregman is really interesting because he is definitely one of the bigger names on the market, right? So you have to think he will probably end up with one of the bigger contracts this offseason. You probably see him going to a team that is, you know, close to being done, expecting to contend in the next couple of years, and maybe just a little bit light on the corners. I have him ending up with the Washington Nationals. $150 million, 6 years, 25 a year. He's 31. He's a veteran. That would be extremely helpful in a very, very young clubhouse. He's won a lot. And again, a Washington team that has some young pieces that desperately need some veteran leadership. You can't have CJ Abrams be your old man in the room, or Joey Gallo, for that matter. And they claim they want to do big things soon, so they're going to need some pieces. And this is also a team that did not get a lot of production out of third last season, with Trey Lipscomb and Nick Senzel pretty much splitting time there. And Ildemar Vargas also, just, you know, they need a name. They need a guy, especially if they want to compete. And their lineup is very, very light in the bottom half, so they need to get some extension there. And they have some money to spend. So again, I've got Bregman going to the Nats. 150 total. That's 25 a year at 6 years.
I have the exact same contract as you, actually, at 6 years and,
really?
And 150. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. But I went pretty just meat and potatoes here, and I have him going back to the Astros. I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I don't think that they're going to want to, like, part with him. I mean, I know that there's been a lot of talk about, like, a change in organizational philosophy there, maybe Jim Crane not wanting to pay as much money anymore, kind of thinking, you know, we've got the rings at this point, but the fans in Houston are not going to be happy about that one bit. And I think maybe there's been a little bit too much talk about that. It might have been a little bit overblown. You know, Bregman has mentioned that he might move to second base in free agency. He certainly would not have to do that if he stayed in Houston. Crawford boxes, like, the best offensive situation for a player like him, like a right-handed, I don't want to say power bat anymore, but, you know, a guy who has incredible plate skills, just draws out at bats, is not somebody you ever want to face as a pitcher. Yeah, I love Bregman as a player. I mean, has some questions about his personal history, but, you know, we'll leave those for another day. I think he's going to get paid. I think he's going to stay in Houston. And, yeah, we've got the same figure there at 6 and 150. So the next one on my list is Corbin Burnes, and this is the biggest name pitcher on the market this year.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
Had he hit free agency maybe 12, 18 months ago, I probably would have said he's the best pitcher in the game, you know, either him or Garrett Cole. But an interesting season out of Burnes. He didn't miss as many bats as he did, but it did start to ramp back up towards the end of the year, and he found a lot of success in Baltimore. He had a really great season. Incredible postseason start. He just couldn't get any help. But yeah, he showed up in that game. He shows up in big moments, and he's been one of the most consistently dominant pitchers in the league for a long time now. One of the best cutters in the world. And I have him going to the Mets. And I think this is going to be one of their big splashes in the offseason, because we know that there's going to be a few of them. I think they're going to get him for $30 million AAV, and I think they're going to sign him for 9 years at $270. We know that Steve Cohen is not afraid to dish out these big contracts, and Corbin Burnes, one of the best pitchers in the game, is going to want to be paid like it, and I think the Mets have a need, and it seems like the best fit, so I would not be one bit surprised to see Corbin Burnes in Queens.
That's a great point. I ended up with the exact same AAV, except I did go that extra step, went 10 for 300. And I have him, much like you have Alex Bregman going back to the Astros, I have Corbin Burnes going back to his orange team in Baltimore. heading back to the O's. And the only reason is because there's a new ownership group in Baltimore that is really going to want to curry favor with the fans, I think, and prove that, like, we are, you know, we're here, we're new, we're different, we're going to retain a guy that we, you know, brought in to be the guy. And this is going to, you know, hopefully mark the first of many moves for them retaining some talent that they desperately need to keep. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up going back to Baltimore. 10 for 300, massive contract for a Baltimore team that never spends on free agents. So it would be interesting to see him actually get that money that he does deserve, because he, again, as you said, best pitcher on the market by far. Going to get the big contract, big fish pitcher, going to get paid like it.
Why don't you start as well for the next guy? The next one on my list, I don't know about yours, but I have Blake Snell.
I don't have him ending up back in San Francisco. I know San Francisco is supposed to be, you know, big on trying to spend this offseason, and he did pitch really well there. But I have him actually staying in the NL, heading to the Central, and winding up on the Chicago Cubs. And I feel like this is a Cubs team that just keeps on bringing in talent, and it doesn't work. And this feels like another move for them to just bring in some talent, pay him a lot of money, and hope that he can, you know, slot in there and work out. Their rotation is pretty good. Shota is very decent. Justin Steele is also very decent. I think Tyone is sticking around for a little bit longer, if I'm not wrong, but he's on the older side. He is, I can't find it. But also you have Javier Assad and Ben Brown last year started a bunch for them. So this is definitely a rotation that could use another starter. They would have three lefties at the top in Snell, Imanaga, and Steele, which is kind of fun. And again, their lineup is decent, so I think the Cubs could probably, if they make a decent splash somewhere, it probably will be at starting pitcher. Yeah, I could see them trying to spend this offseason and try to do something, and Snell feels like a good place to go.
Absolutely.
Oh, and I have the number, excuse me, for 150.
Five for 150, 130 a year. All right, I like that. I added another year to Snell and a little bit more cash. I have him at 6 and 200, and I don't love this prediction. It makes me feel bad, but I have him going to the Boston Red Sox, who are a team that could badly use pitching. You know, he's a lefty. Lefties enjoy the green monster. Save some home run balls for him. This is a team that's definitely going to be able to shell out money in free agency this year. Whether or not they will do so is a bit of an ask, but they certainly have that capability. The main thing that I think about when I think about the Red Sox next year is the fact that they have four prospects on the verge of entering their starting lineup in Roman Anthony, who I have as the number one prospect in the game, along with Christian Campbell, Kyle Teal, and Marcelo Mayer. But the pitching has so many question marks. You know, I think they're going to have one of the best offenses in the league pretty soon. At least it seems that way. But the rotation is a mess, and they don't really have a lot waiting in the pipeline right now either, I don't think, like, unless they really start to develop some of these arms, turn them into lethal starters. But it seems to me like the way for them to get into contention in a very loaded American League East is to put a lot of money into the rotation, and I think that starts with Blake Snell. You know, there are a couple other guys on this list that I could also see the Red Sox signing, and we'll get into that soon. But yeah, I've got Snell to the Sox for 6 and 200. And then next I have Pete Alonso, and this is another boring one. I have him going back to the Mets. I think, you know, if the Yankees get Juan Soto back and the Mets are not able to bring him in, they're going to pivot to the guy that they can bring back, you know, the guy who was their postseason hero with that big three-run home run and has been a fan favorite forever and could just be like a Met for life, you know? They could have a guy who isn't Ed Cranepool for once. I have the Mets retaining Alonso. I think he comes back, and I think he signs for 8 years and $280 million.
Interesting. Okay. Because I have him coming back at 8 years for $220 million, which is 27 and a half. I know the Mets are going to be spending a lot. 280 feels very high, in my opinion, for Pete. But, I mean, then again, you know, he claims that he wants to get paid a shite ton of money. So we'll see. But yeah, I think we're both definitely in agreement there. going back to Queens is not out of the question. As you said, you know, especially if they don't get Soto. But I also wanted to say, too, the first baseman market is not that strong. It's Pete. It is Christian Walker, which we will get into, and Carlos Santana. as your kind of third option, really. There's not a lot there. And the Mets are going to need a first baseman for sure. So, you know, Pete is definitely one of the better options to have. So if you're a Mets team who wants to be able to compete, you might as well go out there and repeat with Pete.
I'm with it. I think we can go on to Max Fried. I like your idea that the Orioles are going to sign pitching. You had it with Corbin Burns, but I have it with Max Fried. I got, you know, this was actually before the Orioles announced they were moving their left field wall in again. This before that. That's a pretty hilarious announcement. The fact that they can't seem to get that right and just made a cartoonish decision, honestly, to back their wall up like 40 feet or whatever it was and just rob all their right-handed hitters of home runs and torture Ryan Mountcastle and Trey Mancini. But they're going to fix
hilarious.
It.
It worked for Anthony Santander, but we'll get into that.
Yeah. I don't think that the alteration to that will deter the signing of Max Fried. The Orioles are going to need to invest in their rotation just like the Sox. The Orioles do have a much better current rotation than the Red Sox do. You know, Grayson Rodriguez, Zach Eflin, Kyle Bradish is going to come back from his injury. And, you know, if they bring back Corbin Burns, you know, then they're going to be set. But I don't have that happening, so I think this is the pivot. I think they signed two starting pitchers. We'll get into who the other one is in just a moment, but I've got Fried to the Orioles for 5 and 150.
I think that's definitely fair. You know, in my scenario, or in your scenario where you don't have them going back and getting Corbin Burns, I think that's a very good place for them to go. And again, I think we both, you didn't say it, but I think we're both in agreement that the front office is going to want to spend. So that's a good good pick there. What did you say the number was again? I'm sorry.
I had 5 and 150.
5 for 150 makes sense. That's, yeah, 30 a year for him. All right, well, I have Max Fried getting about 24 a year for a couple extra years. And I have him going to the Milwaukee Brewers for 7 years, $168 million, and that's 24 a year. And the Milwaukee Brewers, I think, are in an interesting spot because they got rid of their light spending GM who liked to, you know, play the game and, you know, like pull talent out of small guys. They have a new GM now. You know, ownership didn't change, so they're, you know, as far as money, but they have a very light payroll heading into the next couple of years. So I wouldn't be surprised if a team that wants to be able to compete very soon and is very good at getting the most out of their pitchers wants to get their hands on Max Fried, who is already a very good pitcher, but it feels like could end up being a little bit better even if they could, you know, pull whatever the potential is out of him. So their rotation also is, again, decent, but we saw in a short playoff series, they ended up getting burned by it. They had to, you know, rely a little bit too much on their bullpen, which is good, but could definitely use some extra support out of the rotation. And if they're going to go anywhere to spend, and I think they should, because it's a couple years now of being disappointed in the playoffs, I wouldn't be surprised if Fried is at the top of their list.
Yeah, for sure. Next, I have Jack Flaherty. Would you want to start with him?
Sure. Totally. Let's do it. Yeah, Jack Flaherty. So I might be being a little funny with Jack Flaherty. I don't think this is completely out of the realm of possibility. I just think it's funny. Jack Flaherty, to me, has been a pitcher who has always just been, like, perceived as better than he really is. He's, like, treated as someone who's better than he really is. I have him signing an 8-year, $224 million contract with the Los Angeles Angels.
Oh, my.
I feel like they are going to desperately be back in the market to try to spend a ton of money. And the first place they're going to try to go do it is with Jack Flaherty. And I feel like that's really funny and it could totally happen. And it seems like something that they would do. I think the Angels need to be able to say they did anything because they're wasting Mike Trout. As we know, they have not a lot of talent and the pitching market, as I said, is like decently strong. There are some names at the top. I feel like they're not going to go get one of the top names and they're going to get desperate to get a good name and they're going to go for Jack Flaherty and offer him way too much money.
Totally. I could totally see the Angels doing some shit like that. I mean, that'd be a very, very Angels move, but that seems to be the Angels' MO is to never learn and to continue making the same mistakes over and over again.
Perry is still there, so we'll see.
I've got Flaherty also going to the Sox. I think they do a double double dip, and they get both Snell and Jack Flaherty. This would be a change of pace for a team that has not spent a ton of money recently, but, you know, for the exact same reasons I just laid out, you know, they're going to want to double dip and really get that rotation going, especially because it looks like they might not be bringing back Pivetta, who I don't have a prediction for on this list, but who had a pretty good season last year. So, I actually have him signing for the same...
Mariners.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Pivetta to the Mariners. They don't really need him at all, but why not?
They need something.
They got five pitchers already. They need bats. Yeah. Do I even have a bat? Oh, no, I don't. That's fucked up. I should have put the Mariners on here. But
me neither. It's also messed up. They don't spend any money, so we'll see.
Yeah. I have Flaherty and Fried going for the same contract. I put $5 and $150 for Jack as well.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's definitely fair.
And then I guess I can get us started with the next one, who I have as Ha-Seong Kim from the Padres, who had a really good season. Is, I think, super underrated middle infielder. Put the bat on the ball, drives in runs. I mean, gets hits when they matter. Not a huge power guy, but just one of those guys you can plug in there and just say, hey, he's going to give us good production and probably put us in a decent spot to win this game. I have him going to Kansas City. Like you said, for Profar, this is another team that needs to add to their lineup. They had MVP candidate Bobby Witt. We assume he is not going to beat Aaron Judge for the MVP, but, you know, an incredible season from him. Could have won it most years, but just not this one. And they've got a decent lineup behind him with, you know, Vinny Pasquantino. MJ Melendez has been okay. Sal Perez had a really good season, but he's getting up there in age, of course. Michael Garcia was kind of a clown in the series against the Yankees, but he had a good year. They need more lineup help, though, in KC if they want to be an actual contender. And I think Ha-Seong Kim would be a perfect fit for them. So I have him at...
What was your number?
I have him at 4 and 80.
4 and 80. That's interesting. All right. So I also have him going to a central team that is also going to need some lineup help. Funny enough, I've already given this team a free agent, but I'm going to say they're back in the market, and I have him also going to the Milwaukee Brewers. I have him at $12 million a year, though, for 4 years at $48 million. I don't think he's going to make a ton of money this offseason. He doesn't have... power. He's very good at bat to ball, which the Brewers really like. He's a little speedy and he's versatile as an infielder, and I feel like these are all things that I could see the Brewers valuing. So I also just have a feeling that the Brewers, this is based on nothing, I just have a gut feeling because I kind of like the Brewers and I want them to actually try to fix some of their problems, and the bottom of their lineup also could just use some zhuzhing. The last year, Joey Ortiz and Bryce Turang were the middle infielders for most of the season. I think they could probably get an upgrade out of Ha-Seong Kim, who really just does not swing and miss, doesn't expand the zone. Kind of fun to watch. You know, good defender, fast, all the kind of things that you'd want. But yeah, so I have him going to the Brewers for $4.48.
I'm totally into that. Do you want to get us? No, next up is Gleyber Torres. Where do you think Gleyber goes?
I actually did not make a prediction for Gleyber Torres, but actually, I can do it on the fly very easily. Seattle Mariners. I feel like I could really... I know we just said we don't have Seattle getting anybody. It makes sense to me that he ends up in Seattle. He loves Robinson Cano, favorite player growing up, and it's a little on the nose for the Yankees second baseman to leave in free agency and go to the Mariners. I know that, but the Mariners also are in a situation where Gleyber would really help them. He's a good hitter. We know that. I think he would probably really benefit from being in a lower pressure situation in Seattle. He would be beloved there, and everything about Gleyber seems to be someone who enjoys when he is on top of the world, and he is not under a ton of pressure. And I feel like him just going to Seattle, being liked, you know, never having to deal with crazy media, and being a star there along with Julio, I feel like that would go well for him. And I feel like he would also enjoy probably playing with Randy. that whole kind of that crew that they have over there, I feel like he would have some fun with. And also last year, their free agent signing Dylan Moore, age 32, was playing second base. So let's not do that anymore. Let's bring in Gleyber, get you guys a bat that they desperately need. Hopefully be able to fix up that lineup that we know desperately needs help. I'm going to say Gleyber goes there for, by the way, 6 years, let's say, maybe seven. Let's say 7 years. Going to say seven at like 180.
Wow, that's way more than I have him going for. This is the biggest gap between our projections here. I'm probably lowballing him, but part of the reason for that is the team I have him going to. And before I say who it is, I fully acknowledge that... No, kind of close, but no. Okay. I fully acknowledge that this is like a little ridiculous and probably definitely won't happen, but... Just like going around these teams, I was like, I want to predict somebody to these guys because they need offensive help with how good their pitching could be this year if everything clicks.
Sure.
Okay. And I put Gleyber Torres in Pittsburgh.
okay.
Because they don't have a lineup at all. Like, O'Neill Cruz don't. Is great. Brian Reynolds is great. But aside from that, I mean, it is a black hole in terms of offensive success in Pittsburgh. And I put Gleyber Torres there for, again, this is probably too low, but 4 years and $60 million, so 15 average.
I think he's gonna get much more than that.
Maybe he gets a little more than that.
That's certainly a prediction that we can write down, so we'll take that.
Yes, it's absolutely
fun. Look, I don't hate it for the Pirates. If they could do that, I think they would do it in a heartbeat. It's fun. I think you're a little underselling how valuable a bat Gleyber can be.
I think I probably am.
It's still fun. It's still fun. I like the idea.
Cool. All right. So moving on from there, Teoscar Hernandez. I'll start with him.
Sure.
I've put him at a 2-year, $50 million contract to slot into the middle of the Arizona Diamondbacks lineup.
Yeah.
And play outfield in Arizona. What do you think of that?
I like the idea. I have Arizona being in on a different free agent a little bit later on, but we can talk about that when we get there. But yeah, that's fun. That's a lineup that definitely could use another stick, especially in middle of the lineup guy. Teoscar would be fun to watch there. I have Teoscar going somewhere where I think he would be just as impactful, and I think there's a certain team that paid attention to what the Dodgers did to the New York Yankees and thought, hey, we could probably use a guy who can beat the New York Yankees. And I have the Minnesota Twins bringing Teoscar Hernandez in for 4 years at $88 million. I feel like he would slot in very well in a lineup that has a ton of power and a lot of young hitters that could probably use a good veteran bat who's won before. That would, I think, play very well in Minnesota. It's also a team that's not afraid to spend in free agency and kind of was quiet last year and definitely could go out and spend some money this offseason. They also need pitching, but their lineup was a problem too. So I'm going to have Teoscar heading out to play left, replacing Trevor Larnach for the most part in Minnesota, 22 a year.
Okay.
$88
million. Nice. Very, very possible that he gets that. I put 2 years, but you know, maybe that's being a little bit conservative.
He's 32, so I have to imagine he's looking for, like, again, you had him at 25, I have him at 22, so I think 4 years at 22 is probably fair for him.
Yeah, he's probably not trying to hit the open market again at 34. He's probably looking to get all locked up. Yeah, and I see what you mean.
I don't hate that though, because I could see him also going for a little bit more money for a shorter deal and trying to just do it again. I feel like he'll be around until he's old, so he's probably not too concerned.
I think that's probably true. What's next?
I've got Kikuchi here. Do you have anything for him?
I do. Yeah, I put Kikuchi. Okay. Actually, okay. So I have two more pitchers going to the Baltimore Orioles. I think I'm just going to say who they both are. One of them is obviously Yusei Kikuchi, but the other one I've got Sean Manaea. I think they're going to go big into left-handed pitchers in the rotation. Again, I did this before they announced the wall thing, but I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. I mean, we saw what...
It still works, yeah.
Yeah, like we saw what Kikuchi can do when he was with the Astros after that trade. I mean, you know, he's either like one of the worst pitchers in the league or he's one of the best. And like, ultimately it's all about, you know, getting him into his rhythm, you know, making sure that all of his stuff is working at once and pairing him with the elite coaching staff that he needs to succeed. I think in an environment like Baltimore, I think he would be able to do that pretty nicely. I mean, you know, we saw how well Zach Eflin did when he came over from the Rays. Corbin Burns slotted right into that rotation. You know, of course, he's one of the best pitchers in the league, but there really was no even hiccup with getting any of these guys like accustomed to pitching in Baltimore. So I think they've had a good amount of success with guys that they've brought in, even if Jack Flaherty wasn't the best trade acquisition the year before. I think you say Kikuchi and Sean Manaea would be great additions to this rotation. I think, you know, in that case, if everybody stayed healthy, it would be one of the deepest rotations in the league. And that would be a great thing to hear if you're a Baltimore Orioles fan, where for so long there's been a lot of questions about pitching, and they've for years had one of the worst rotations in baseball. So I like them to go in on some of these offers this offseason. I have Kikuchi. I have both these guys going for 20 AAV. I have Sean Manaea signing for 3 years and $60 million, and I have Kikuchi going for 5 and 100. Okay. I don't want to kind of throw you off there with the two, but where did you have Kikuchi going?
You know what? I can cover both these guys really quick too, because I just have Manaea going back to the Mets. I have him also at $20 million. I have him at 4 for $80. So heading back to the Mets at 20 for $4 for $80. I feel like he was very important to them. They do need pitching. And I feel like he was a good piece for that clubhouse. I feel like I wouldn't be surprised to have him just show back up. And a good friend of mine at work who is a big-time Mets fan, when I asked what they should be doing first, he was like, Manaea, first things first. So I'm going to take him at his word.
Okay.
That Manaea is going to be important to them to bring back. So Kikuchi, I also have a $20 million, by the way. I just realized we're in lockstep on the AAV there. I have him at 3 for $60, and I have him returning to a former team of his, heading up north of the border, up to Toronto, and going back to the Blue Jays, who are probably going to be spending a ton of money this offseason, or at least want to. They claim that they're in on Soto. They do need some more pitching. They're very familiar with Kikuchi, who had a very good season down in Houston. And this is a team that desperately wants to be taken seriously and is going to need some pitching to do that. So I think Kikuchi probably slots into their plans pretty well.
Yeah, I think so.
Also, they have no lefties in their rotation, so he would be fun to add in.
Yeah, there you go. What do you think? Did you get Manaea? Did I miss that?
Yeah, Manaea back to the Mets.
Manaea back to the Mets. 80. Right. That's right. Yep. Okay. The next arm I have on the list is Shane Bieber. And speaking of the Mets, I have the Mets signing Shane Bieber.
I feel like the Mets are a great pick for him. Honestly, yeah. That or I could see him going to the Dodgers.
Yeah, I could see that too. I mean, it's a lot of risk with the arm, you know. I remember like watching Shane Bieber pitch in like 2021, and so many times he would have like 127 pitches, and like no one else in the league would be doing anything like that. And I'm like, dude, this guy is gonna break if you do this. And then, you know, sure enough, he broke. But yep. So it's kind of a risk in terms of like, you know, how much health you're gonna get out of Shane Bieber moving forward. But yeah, like a lot of it is risk that doesn't really matter so much when you have all the money in the world, and that's what Steve Cohen has shown that he has and is willing to spend. And he needs to spend it on a rotation to make this team elite, you know, especially if they miss out on Soto. I think he's going to be very angry and would go in for all these other guys. So that's why I have him shelling out a lot of money for Alonso and Burns and Shane Bieber. And I think Bieber goes for 6 and 180, which might be a lot, but, you know, he's shown that he's one of the best pitchers in the league when he's healthy. So
6 for $180. That's a hefty sum for Shane Bieber that I wouldn't be surprised. That is definitely fair that he ends up out there making some coin out there here, I should say, in Queens. That's a good point. Look, the risk thing with him is really what it's all about. There's not a lot of teams that I think would be blindly willing to take on a lot of risk outside of the Mets, the Dodgers, and the Angels, honestly, maybe just because they like to spend on names. So I'm going to say that he ends up going to the Dodgers just because I feel like he ends up at either the Mets or the Dodgers, and then we can be right. So I'm going to say Dodgers for 6 for $180 is high. Do you know how old he is?
I think he also has the resume at this point and has like backed up his performance for so long that he's not going to take anything shy of like at least being in the realm of what he sees as his worth. Like, I think he's going to get big contract.
He's also 29.
Yeah.
So he isn't, like, ancient. Like, you know, I guess it's not impossible, but I'm just going to say that he ends up going out for, let's say, I'm going to say 4 years, and I'm going to say, you know what, how about 4 for $100? Cool, 25. That feels fair. Dodgers, okay. 4 for $100.
Sure. Getting to our last few names here, I've got The four names I have left are Nate Evaldi, Christian Walker, Tanner Scott, and Blake Trennan. Have you got those guys, or have you got anyone
interesting.
Else?
Yeah, I've got Nick Martinez. I've got Michael Walker. Michael Walker already signed back to the Royals, so we can scratch that. I've got Santander, which I think is kind of fun. We've been talking a lot about the Mets. We talked about the Yankees with Soto. I have Anthony Santander as a conditional signing. Whoever does not get Juan Soto will sign Anthony Santander for 6 years and $150 million. I feel like he's going to go to the loser of the Soto sweepstakes, and he's going to be the let's make peace with our fans, bringing a guy who, a switch hitter at 44 homers last year. Feel like that's, a decent thing to slot into the middle of your lineup after losing out on a big fish. So either the Mets or the Yankees, whoever loses out on Soto, that's where he's going.
Okay. I like that a lot. I put Anthony Santander to the Cubs, actually. This is just like a lineup boost for a team that I think could really, really use it. Santander has been quietly destroying the ball in Baltimore. Like, he was one of the best hitters in the game last year, like a really just solid across the board hitter, switch hitter too, both sides of the plate. I mean, he's pretty much everything you want in an outfield bat. Totally. And yeah, I could see him going to the Cubs. I put for 3 and 60. Not a whole lot of reasoning behind that. I wanted to keep it pretty simple.
Sure.
But yeah, next up for me, Nate Evaldi. I have him going to the Blue Jays, which could be interesting. I mean, the Blue Jays, they have a rotation that's going to need some help. I mean, behind just, Jose Berrios and Chris Bassett, they don't seem to have a lot going for them right now. They've had a couple busts in their rotation, and also the injury to Ricky Tiedemann was really bad. He was looking like he was going to be in that staff for a while, but it's a tough scene. It's nothing that you can really do about that, but you can spend money on good pitching to bring in good players to your team, and it really can be as simple as that. And Evaldi is going to be on the market, and he's looking for a steady veteran contract. We know that the Blue Jays are looking to spend money, and if they don't get Soto, which I really do not think that they will, they probably just allocate that across a couple of other veterans, and I think Evaldi could very well be one of them, and I have him going for 3 years and $70 million.
I have him going back to the Rangers at 3 for $45 million. No, almost exactly half. So I wouldn't be surprised if he stuck around in Texas. They like him there. He seems to like it there. I think he's from there, I'm pretty sure. But feels like he's a fit in that clubhouse, which, hopefully they're trying to look to getting back to doing big things, which he was a part of a couple of years ago. So back to Texas, 3 for $45 million, $15 million.
Okay, I like it. Where do you want to go next, to Christian Walker?
Yeah, I think we should probably hit Christian Walker. He's, I think, one of the most important guys on the market this offseason. He's kind of, I think a few teams are kind of hinging on his decision. So if you want to take it, go ahead.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I can take that one. I will go with Christian Walker joining Anthony Santander in Chicago and bolstering that Wrigley Field lineup. He'd be a great fit. Yeah, I think we're done with Michael Bush. I mean, I think the Dodgers were done with Michael Bush when they traded him. They didn't find a spot for him in like years. The Cubs gave up way too much for him. Zaire Hope looking like one of the best prospects in the game, and Jackson Ferris is a great minor league arm as well. I mean, both of those guys have sky high potential, and Michael Bush is all right. He strikes out too much. He does have a lot of power. He can smack the shit out of the ball, but he seems like a guy that I think might be better served in sort of a bench role or like a utility spot. He's certainly not an everyday starting first baseman, and when you play in that big market, you want to bring in the big names, and first base seems to be a hole for the Cubs, and I could see it being filled by Christian Walker for 5 years at $100 million.
That seems like a lot to me. I have Walker going for a lot less, but we've discussed on the side, because I did put this in my article about the Yankees offseason plans. I have Walker going to the Yanks 3 for $36 million total. So 12 a year. He's old. So, you know, he also hasn't done this that often. I don't really see a team shelling out a lot of money for an older first baseman who hasn't, like, really had a crazy track record of being great. You know, he's been good the last couple of years, got a lot of power. He's a good hitter, and he's got, you know, he's a good defender. So I wouldn't be surprised if he made a lot of money. I don't see a team shelling out a ton for him. But again, the first base market is light, so I could see him making some serious money too. I just don't think so. And I think the Yankees are going to jump on a chance to get him on the cheaper side. So if they can, I think they will. If he gets a lot more than that, he'll be going somewhere else. Cubs are a good fit.
I'd be a very big fan of that. I'd love to see Christian Walker in pinstripes. I'd be like, and speaking of pinstripes, that's actually where I have my next free agent going. I think the Yankees are going to sign Tanner Scott, because all throughout this postseason, all I could think to myself whenever we were in the bullpen was, God, how nice would it be to have a power lefty right now. And yep. I don't really blame them for not acquiring Tanner Scott at the deadline, because the price turned out to be pretty ridiculous and the Padres gave up so much to get him. And yeah, I don't fault the Yankees for not beating that offer with whatever their equivalent of it would be. I mean, I think that would have been something that pissed more people off than it would have done good. But Tanner Scott now would be a great addition to this pen. I mean, I think you got to be careful with paying free agent relievers. You know, we've seen that burn teams so many times in the past. So I don't want to see them give up anything insane, but I think his services are badly needed, and I could see them giving him $50 million over 3 years. So I've got Tanner Scott to the Yanks.
I like that. I have Tanner Scott also going to the Yanks at 45 for 3 years. So pretty much in line there. That's same thing you said. Well said. All right. They just need another arm, and he is the best one on the market, and I don't think you'd have to pay a ton. Yankees don't like to pay relievers. As you said, it's dangerous. But they are in a position right now where they really kind of need to if they want to be taken seriously. And, you know, love Luke Weaver, but I think him in the eighth inning, you know, he's shown you he can be extremely reliable at the back end of a game. Him in the eighth and Scott in the ninth would be deadly.
Yeah, I would love it. The last name on my list is, well, actually second to last, because we haven't done Roky Sasaki yet. I wanted to save him for last. But last name my list is Blake Trenin. And I have him going back to the Dodgers, 2 years, $30 million. You know, we saw that work for them. I don't think they want to change up that formula too much. You know, they're great at churning out relievers, so maybe they want to say, you know, we'll spend our money elsewhere and just find the next one in the minors. I could very well see them doing that. But, yeah, I don't know. It seems like a fit that they don't want to change. So I've got Trenin back to the Dodgers for $230 million.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I actually don't have a prediction for Blake Trenin. It wasn't on my list, but I don't hate that. He's very old. I think he's like 37. I could see him signing a one-year deal somewhere, maybe around like $18 million. If it does go for two, I'm okay with saying two for 36 back to LA too. They're a team that does also need pitching. Wouldn't be surprised if they retained one of their trustworthy guys. So I like that. I'll stick with you at Dodgers. One for 18, two for 36, somewhere in there.
And then speaking of the Dodgers, I already said it earlier in the pod, but I think this really is far and away the likely outcome for Roky Sasaki. And he is especially interesting because he will not be able to sign that huge free agent contract based on the status of his being posted from Japan. You know, he had not hit that required amount of time. So he's not going to be making a ton of money, but he's going to be
making no money.
Yeah, he's going to be making barely anything. But he's going to be unbelievably productive for the team that he pitches for, assuming that he stays healthy. So it's going to be a cheat code.
Every team is in on Roky Sasaki.
Every team should be, at least. But yeah, it seems to me like I really think he's probably going to end up as a Dodger. And that pains me to say, because I think they're going to win every World Series for the next 5 years, honestly. But yeah, I'd like to hear what you think.
I mean, I like to think that he could end up as a Yankee. I did put in my article that they need to do everything they can to go get him. The Yankees do have more in international bonus pool signing money, so they could offer more money than the Dodgers to sign him. So depending on if it is, you know, money that he's after, it's on the table that they could outbid the Dodgers, because they literally cannot offer any more money than, like, I think it's like, you know, 5 million. The Yankees can play with like 6.5. And I think it's a bunch of teams above them who can offer like 7 or 7.5. International signings are odd. But I could see him going to Seattle. I could see him going to New York, but LA scares me. But I'm gonna stick to my guns. I'm gonna say he ends up in New York. I think the Yankees are in need of a pitcher like that, who's young, cost controlled, and very good. Who isn't, honestly? But the Yankees do have, you know, a good track record of signing guys out of Japan too. It's not just the Dodgers. Apparently, Sasaki's favorite player growing up was Tanaka. Just saying, it's on the table. So it's not impossible that he ends up in pinstripes. I'm gonna be an optimist and say they do it.
Okay.
He probably will be a Dodger, though. So we'll see.
Well, I think that's the end of our list. Do we have any other players we want to mention? I think you might have had one or two. Do you want to run through those?
Yeah, I've got Carlos Santana going to the Nationals, 1-for-16. I had Nick Martinez going to the Red Sox, 3-for-54, 18 a year.
Okay.
Which I thought was kind of fun. And Jock Peterson I had going back to Arizona. And Jose Iglesias going back to the Mets, which he was in the top 20 that I did, so just threw him in there. 2-for-25.
All right.
Any other thoughts?
No, I mean, I think this is a very interesting free agent class. You know, we have a lot of star players on both sides of the ball and a lot of teams who really need to prove themselves, you know, both on and off the field. A lot of owners who, you know, seem to want to make a name for themselves, you know, especially... Really, I'm mainly talking about Steve Cohen there. The fact that his last free agent splash blew up in his face so hard, I think he would like to do a lot of saving face this time around and really turn the Mets into a contender. Yeah, he has a lot to spend. And I hope it doesn't go to Juan Soto. But if it does, you know, the sun will still rise the next day. Or it won't. Who knows?
True. Or it won't. I guess we'll have to see.
I am very excited to see how all of this plays out. We will certainly talk about it when it does happen. Got a lot coming up. But yeah, we're going to talk about Sean Baker's Red Rocket on Friday. So that will be our next episode. It'll be a ton of fun. And I look forward to it. But that has been all from us on the Mudville Podcast this week. I have been one of your hosts, Nolan Rabine.
I've been your other host, Brody Stout. Let us know if there's anything that you feel super strongly about, too, because this is a fun free agent class. There's a lot of opinions flying around on where these guys are going. So let us know. You know, any fun predictions, we'd love to hear.
And you, dear listener, will never be Pope. Goodbye.